Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Tucson, Arizona, earned a degree from the U.S. Coast Guard Academy in 1971, and has served our country ever since for the last 38 years. On May 25th, 2006, he became the 23rd Commandant of the United States Coast Guard, and as such, leads 42,000 of America's finest. He's the face of the Coast Guard, Admiral Thad Allen. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's Jack.
We're with Admiral Thad Allen, the 23rd Commandant of the United States Coast Guard. Admiral, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
We're pleased to be here.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your parents?
Sure. Well, I am the son of a retired Chief Petty Officer in the United States Coast Guard, and I was born in Los Angeles, California, while he was deployed on a Coast Guard cutter. He was a seaman on the deck force. He had previously lied about his age and went in the Coast Guard when he was 16 in World War II. After the war, he had met my mother and actually became a logger in Oregon and northern Arizona. My mother was pregnant with me when he came back in the service, and he took a bus to seaman. And again, I was born while he was underway on the deck force on the Coast Guard Minnetonka in Los Angeles, California.
What were the biggest things you learned, Admiral, from your mom, and the biggest things you learned from your dad?
Well, both of my parents are generational representatives of the greatest generation, but also the experience of the Great Depression. And I think the overwhelming sense you get from both of them, at least in my time growing up, number one, is a sense of family values where you're drawn closer together by adversity, and certainly their families experienced a lot of adversity. I think second, everybody understood the amount of sacrifice that it took for the greatest generation to go to war and save the world. And their sense of patriotism and pride and what the U.S. military had done for my dad and my mom over the course of his career and for our family, I think is a very, very strong value they both currently hold.
You graduated from high school in Tucson, Arizona, and you decide to go to the U.S. Coast Guard Academy across the country. Why did you decide to go there?
Well, it's probably for a pretty funny reason. I've been raised up and down the West Coast my entire life. My dad had been stationed in Alaska, Washington, Oregon, and California. And we moved to Arizona in 1965. I did my final 2 years of high school there, and I was about ready to graduate. And I had a lot of options. I had some scholarship money to the University of Arizona. I had some scholarship opportunities at the University of Colorado and University of California, Berkeley. And I also had an appointment to the U.S. Naval Academy. I applied to the Coast Guard Academy because I knew a lot about it because of my dad's service, but really hadn't intended to go there particularly. And the final deciding point is something that was probably very strange to anybody listening from the outside. I decided that I was too small to play Division I football, and the Coast Guard Academy was Division III, so that was a final deciding factor.
And you were a star there. You were a star there. After you graduated from the Coast Guard Academy, your goal was to spend 5 years with the Coast Guard. 38 years later, you're still with us serving. What happened?
Well, I think most cadets going through the Coast Guard Academy are skeptical about an entire career because you haven't been out and you haven't served in the fleet, you haven't got involved in Coast Guard operations. So I, like a lot of other folks, had the basic plan to serve 5 years and then see what was going to happen with the rest of my life. And I think, however, over the course of a career, especially in the first 5 years, you start being drawn to the mission of the service. You get involved in search and rescue cases. You get involved in law enforcement operations. You get involved with assisting people. And the mission and the everyday feedback that you get for both organizational performance and personal performance becomes fairly dramatic, and it's a real draw to keep you in the service. So you keep sticking around and sticking around, and I guess that's what happened to me.
Can Can you share with us the mission of the Coast Guard?
Well, the Coast Guard is a multi-mission service. We do a lot of things for this country. Basically, we are a dual-character organization. We are at all times a military service. We are one of the five armed forces in this country. I meet regularly with the Joint Chiefs of Staff in the Pentagon and are involved with them in giving military advice to the president. But we also are under Title 14 of the U.S. Code, a law enforcement organization. And in fact, when we were created in 1790 as the Revenue Marine, we were the first customs officers in the country. So this unique dual character of being both a military service and a law enforcement organization pretty much has stamped the identity of our Coast Guard over the years. In addition, we've acquired life-saving responsibilities from U.S. Life-Saving Service in 1915. We acquired the U.S. Lighthouse Service in 1939. And under the Emergency Reorganization Powers in World War II, the President moved the Bureau of Marine Inspection and Navigation to the Coast Guard. So I guess I would tell you that if it happens on the water and it's not defense-related and it's wet, it's the Coast Guard's.
How has the Coast Guard changed, Admiral Allen, in the 38 years you've served in it?
Well, our external operating environment has changed dramatically, the threats that we deal with on a day-to-day basis. When I came into the Coast Guard, the war in Vietnam was going on. The type of technology at the time required us to do a lot of oceanographic work and provide a lot of weather information that is done now by satellites and by buoys. And, of course, the war in Vietnam is long since over. What has emerged in these 30-plus years are critical missions that deal with transnational threats and new, what I would call, post-Cold War issues that we have to deal with as one of the nations in the globe. Things like illegal migration, illegal drug trafficking, our scarce resources in terms of fisheries and natural resources, marine sanctuaries, marine mammals, and so forth. The technology involving the maritime transportation system has changed dramatically. And so our role in ACE navigation regarding what used to be just taking care of buoys goes well beyond that now to electronic navigation and making sure that the mariners understand the threats that are out there. We get involved in domestic and international icebreaking. Just a plethora of activities on the water that have changed dramatically in the 30 years that I've been in the Coast Guard.
We're talking to Admiral Thad Allen, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Admiral Thad Allen, who is the only four-star general of the Coast Guard. I don't know if when you go home whether you're a four-star general, Admiral, but at least in the service. So when President Bush selected you to be the 23rd Commandant, and you made the phone call to your mom and dad, what did your dad say?
Well, I think it's safe to say he was fairly excited. He had seen me progress from a student in high school to a cadet at the Coast Guard Academy to an officer. And over the years, as I was promoted and given increasing assignments of increasing responsibility, he was always thrilled and was always there at the changes of command whenever I was relieved or assumed a new command, and always had an extreme amount of pride, not only in what I did, but the overall pride of the service and being a former Coast Guardsman. I wouldn't say he was speechless, but he didn't say a lot right away, and that's saying something for my father because he's very, very talkative. So I think he was very surprised when I made the call.
They say that a person or a son or a daughter will always be a son or a daughter to their mom and a dad, independent of who they are. Do you find that with your mom and dad?
Well, I think that's really true. And in fact, in the time that I've been in the Coast Guard, from the time I first became a flag officer in 1996 and the subsequent assignments I've had, I've always involved my dad in my work to the extent that when he is visiting, I haven't sat down and talked with my chiefs. And when he's been able to travel with me, I've done that as well. We had a great opportunity back earlier this year to commission the war memorial in the Pacific for the Coast Guard in the Punch Bowl in Honolulu. And when we uncovered the memorial, my dad was out there with me and was able to pull the cover off the memorial. So things like that allow you to take the joint experiences you've had, although they've been decades apart, his experience in the war, my service in Southeast Asia, then the war in Vietnam, then be able to do things like that together, really create a special bond, and it's always been a joy for me to do that.
You've stated that of all the historical figures, the one you'd like to meet the most would be Alexander Hamilton. Admiral, why?
Well, Alexander Hamilton is regarded as the father of the Coast Guard. He was the first Secretary of Treasury in the United States. And in fact, the cause for action to create a Coast Guard, he even wrote about in Federalist Paper Number 12, which is called On Revenue. He was concerned after the war with British smuggling and their failure to pay duties, which was the only income stream the new country had at the time to pay off its war debt and to operate the country. So on August 4th, 1790, legislation was passed at his request to authorize the construction of 10 very fast sailing vessels they call cutters, and that's the name we derived for our vessels even to this day. He is arguably one of the greatest geniuses in American government. He started a lot of institutions that last till today, including the federal banking system, the New York Stock Exchange. He was a constitutional lawyer. He was an ardent abolitionist. He was born illegitimately in the down in Nevis, a little island near St. Kitts in the Caribbean, through his teenage years in St. Croix, and then finally to New York. Basically came up the hard way. And while he was not perfect and probably was one of the first American politicians involved in a sex scandal, as some of we even see today, the brilliance of his work really paved the way for the modern America. And he's also pretty much known as the father of public administration in this country. And that's one of my master's degrees, so I have a lot of respect for his intellectual power. He wasn't a perfect person, but he was the right person at the right time for this country after the Revolution and standing the new government after the Constitution was enacted.
Who are some of your other heroes, Admiral Allen?
Well, I think when you go out through history, anybody that's taken a hard stand in very difficult times, I mean, when people look at what Lincoln was able to accomplish, it's rather extraordinary, and how he was able to manage the generals and the people in his cabinet, as we've heard, the band of rivals. And I think people that they're able to take very large and complex problems, insert their personal leadership into it to make something happen. Are great role models. So it's not one in particular, but it's people that demonstrate those types of characteristics. I did have an opportunity, though, just a few weeks ago to meet Arnold Palmer, and he's become one of my heroes, and I'll tell you why. When he grew up in Pennsylvania, he was son of a working man who was a greenskeeper at the local golf course. And when his best friend got a scholarship to Wake Forest, his friend said he would not go unless Arnold went with him to play golf there. His friend was killed at the end of their third year in college, and he was drifting around and didn't know what to do, and he enlisted in the United States Coast Guard. After a three-year tour, he went back and finished his education at Wake Forest, went on to the PGA Tour, and never looked back. And that night I had to talk with him and learn about his life experiences, what the Coast Guard did for him, made him one of my heroes.
Did you give him any golf tips?
No, I'm a lousy golfer. In fact, I don't even golf at all. I'm just a former football player.
as the commandant, you are the leader of 42,000 of America's finest. What makes a great leader?
Well, first of all, I think anybody that's going to lead people has to have a set of values that they act on every day that allows them to be courageous when they need to be, even in the face of things that aren't going well. I think you have to be able to communicate with your people. I think you have to have your people be able to walk in the door and tell you when things aren't going right, and I try and encourage that. And I try and be as transparent as possible with my folks, subject to what you can legally do in the Coast Guard regarding release of information and things like that. But I think making yourself accessible, being out with your people, being in front when things are happening, walking the talk ahead of them, and then backing them up when they need it, allowing people to make mistakes and be able to mature in organizations, those are the things that have helped me grow in the Coast Guard, and those are things I would expect out of any good leader.
42,000 people spread all over the earth. You know, on cutters, ships, outposts, how do you communicate to 42,000 people?
Well, it's a pretty significant challenge. You know, in the old days, there was not a lot of communication. Units were deployed, and aside from official communication, which in the early days might have been signal flags or radio telegraph, and then radio, then ultimately more modern means to communicate lately in this last century, in the beginning of this one, it was very difficult. But now, We are networked through email. We are networked through the internet, and there are all kinds of ways to communicate with your people. And I try and use every single one of them to be as effective as I can. I have a way to send out an email to all hands in the Coast Guard when I want to pass something important or make an important announcement. I also have a blog site where I post and solicit comments on what's going on in the Coast Guard and what I'm doing. Also have created a Facebook site because a lot of the young kids operate out in the social media area, and having a presence out there is really important for them to understand that we understand how they communicate, how they aggregate socially, and how they communicate with each other.
One of the many things you use is an all-hands messages. And I read a few of them in preparation of this, and one was entitled Being a Garden, G-U-A-R-D-I-A-N. Talk to us about that.
Well, we've been thinking for a long, long time about how to bring young people into the Coast Guard and how to acclimate them to the type of organization which is very, very different than a regular military organization, although we are a military service, and very different than a traditional law enforcement organization. So over the last few years, the Master Chief of the Coast Guard, Master Chief Skip Bowen, has worked with the people at our boot camp up in Cape May, New Jersey, to try and explain to the young people coming into the Coast Guard what it is they do, and in search for an overarching term that covers all of our mission sets, which could be anywhere from defending the country to saving people to protecting the environment, they came up with a concept of the Guardian and a Guardian ethos. And that's really what we try and get our kids to understand when they're coming into boot camp and when they leave, to have a capstone event that shows them what they're going to do in the Coast Guard. The things I talked about earlier that got me to stay around in the service after 5 years are those things that relate to creating a persona and understanding what it's like to be a guardian, and we think it's very, very important for our service. And it's been a very, very successful concept as far as communicating with our people and having them understand what it is we're trying to do.
You're recruiting 18, 19-year-old kids. They give a few years of service, and then they go into business. Can you talk to business leaders today about how to relate to these kids? What makes these kids tick?
Well, first of all, as they come into the Coast Guard, we need to understand we're dealing with a generation that's vastly different than the one that entered the Coast Guard when I did. They communicate, as I said earlier, much differently. They're involved in social media. They have different theories about how to serve the government, what's important to them, and we need to understand that. When they leave the service and go back into the community, whether it's the Coast Guard or any of the other military services, what you get is somebody that's learned a set of values, that's learned how to work as a team member through boot camp, that's been able to take the things that were taught to them and apply that in an operational setting, whether it's in combat, search and rescue, or providing support, and learn how to be part of a effort or a goal or a vision that's larger than yourself, and commit to something beyond your own personal aspirations and be part of a larger team. Those types of people become invaluable to any organization, including the private sector, when they get out, and I think that's what the military does for our country.
We're talking to Admiral Thad Allen. When we come back, we'll talk to him about a career in the Coast Guard today. And I'm Jack Crystal, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Presented by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's your host, Jack Crisula.
We're talking to Admiral Thad Allen, the Commandant of the U.S. Coast Guard. Admiral, can you talk to us about a career today in the Coast Guard?
Well, I think a career in the Coast Guard today offers some extraordinary opportunities to the young folks in this country. And whether you come in as an enlisted person or as an officer, you're going to have a chance to do things that you might not have a chance to do anywhere else, even in another military service, because the breadth of our missions go well beyond defense operations to things like search and rescue and law enforcement. But the kind of things that happen in a career in the Coast Guard are that you are given responsibility at a very early age and a very early rank, whether you're enlisted or officer in the Coast Guard. And with those responsibilities, you learn about accountability and understanding what it is to have a mission assigned, complete the mission, and then be evaluated on that performance. And for the enlisted folks, as they come up through the ranks, they're allowed to pick a specialty. We train them at a primary school. then they get further education as they go along, and as they progress up, they get increasing levels of responsibility and technical levels of responsibility. And I would say probably in the Coast Guard, we have more command opportunities for enlisted people than you would see in even the other armed forces. It's not unusual for one of our coastal search and rescue stations or one of our patrol boats or the boats that operate on the waterways of the Mississippi River Basin and so forth to be commanded by senior enlisted people, not officers. And on the officer side, the opportunity to command at an early age, I think, is unparalleled in the Coast Guard. You're able to take command of cutters, patrol boats, as a Lieutenant JG or the second rank up that you get after a first tour on a Coast Guard cutter. I myself was a commanding officer of a Loran transmitting station in Southeast Asia in Thailand, right at the end of the war in Vietnam. And the ability to have the kind of autonomy and responsibility and command at an early age, I think, sets us apart both from the enlisted and the officer ranks from the other services.
If you look at the 42,000 people today you lead, it's a United Nations. Talk to us about diversity today.
Well, I think it's apparent that the world is becoming more diverse. The United States is becoming more diverse. And I think somewhere in the middle of this century, actually, you're going to see white males probably become the minority. And we're very mindful of that. We're very focused on a couple of things. Number one is understanding and celebrating diversity. And as I tell our folks, I believe the diversity is a readiness issue. If your service is not made up of the it looks like the community you're serving, you will not understand it as well and be able to react and serve it as well. And the example I always use is if we're in the middle of the Straits of Florida at night trying to stop a boat running at high speed from Cuba, bringing illegal migrants in, at that point, the ability to understand Hispanic culture, understand Latin culture, to be able to speak Spanish, really transcends just cultural awareness and becomes an operational imperative. Likewise, to make sure that we populate the Coast Guard with those kind of people is very, very important to us.
You get these young people from all over the world. You bring them together. How do you get them to work as a team rather than point fingers when things go wrong?
Well, teaching young people how to work as a team really begins in boot camp or our accession points, the Coast Guard Academy or Officer Candidate School, where we try to imbue in them, first of all, the value of the mission of the Coast Guard, and then to get them to understand if you're going to be a true guardian, that you can only accomplish that by being an effective member of a team. And in fact, as we bring people up through the Coast Guard, we have 21 leadership competencies that we use to actually go through a progression of leadership training to help them be better team members and better team leaders. And that starts at the first level with what we call leading yourself. Then it progresses through leading others, leading change, and actually then at the top is leading the Coast Guard as an enterprise. So as you go through a career progression as an officer or an enlisted person in the Coast Guard, our leadership training is aimed at starting with the individual and expanding that up to the point when they take positions of responsibility. They're not only part of a team, but they're ready to lead a team, and even beyond that, to work across teams to produce the effects we need for the organization and the country.
How do you affect change, Admiral Allen, in an ever-changing world?
Well, change is always difficult in organizations, and we're going through significant change in the Coast Guard right now. One of the things that I have as a goal during my tenure as Commandant is to create an organization that is more flexible and agile, understand change in mission demand signals when we receive them, and then adapts accordingly. And I am making some significant changes in how we do mission support and mission execution in the Coast Guard. But the bottom line is there's so much change going on in the world, and it is accelerating. We work in a very complex external environment, and it's not restricted to our own country anymore. We work in a 7x24 global context. And what I'm really trying to do is create a change-centric organization in the Coast Guard to move from being more reactive to being proactive and understanding that we've got to sense the environment better than react to it, otherwise we're not serving our customers the way we should. And if there's any centerpiece of my tenure as Commandant, it is that.
Can you talk to us about the times you've gone to visit our recovering soldiers at Walter Reed Hospital?
Yeah, occasionally I will go up to Walter Reed and Bethesda, both places where we're taking care of our wounded coming back from the war in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's always almost a life-altering experience every time you go up there because it's never quite the same. But the extraordinary dedication and devotion and sacrifice these young kids have made evoke in my mind the greatest generation of World War II, and I tell folks in public speaking events that this country has nothing to worry about with this younger generation. They are prepared to sacrifice, and they are prepared to do what's right to defend the freedom of this country. And the best example I can give you was a young sergeant that I ran into, and he had told me he was returning to his vehicle with his men, and somebody stepped out of an alleyway with a homemade knife and jammed it into the side of his head under his helmet, clear into his brain. And as he fell to the ground, I asked him if the people around him shot and killed the person that had done that. And he said, as he was laying on the ground, he ordered him not to shoot the individual because he was no longer armed, because the knife was in his head. I think that's an extraordinary display of leadership, fortitude, and personal courage is indicative of the type of young kids we have fighting for this country overseas.
I had the honor to go to Walter Reed about 6 months ago and spend the day with General Jack Nicholson. And I think we visited 23 phenomenal young people. And every one, Admiral, that had all their limbs had one goal. They wanted to get back to their unit in Mosra, Baghdad, Afghanistan, etc. Everyone that had lost a limb, one goal. That when their unit finished the deployment and flew to Germany, they wanted to be on the tarmac in Germany waiting for the unit. How do you explain that?
Well, it's absolutely consistent with what I've heard, too. And you're absolutely right. The number one desire of anybody I've met at Walter Reed or Bethesda is to return to their unit or be with their unit if they can't return to the service. It gets back to the discussion we had earlier about creating that ethos when young kids come in the military that make them want to become members of teams. And then once they're a member of the team, the power and the effect of what teams are able to accomplish and the amount you have to lean on each other and depend on each other sometimes for your lives creates a bond that's never forgotten. And 20 years from now, they will still be in contact with the members of their units, just as I am still in contact with the members of my academy class. And that is what the military does for this country. It creates people that work with each other, work in teams, and to the point where they will sacrifice their lives for their teammates, the people in the foxhole with them or beside them on the deck of the ship, and allow us to be able to put those people out there and know they will defend our country at all costs.
We're talking to Admiral Thad Allen, who led the Coast Guard's efforts for Katrina. We'll talk to him when we come back. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm, presents Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with the 23rd Commandant of the United States Coast Guard, Admiral Thad Allen. Admiral, you led the Coast Guard's efforts in the recovery of Katrina. What did you learn from that experience?
Well, let me explain how I was involved, because we had Coast Guard people on the ground that were responding from the minute the storm came ashore, but they were really acting under the direction of our local Coast Guard commander. When I became involved, which was about a week later when the president sent me down on Labor Day to assume the response coordination in New Orleans, I was actually acting in a national capacity, transcending what the Coast Guard was doing and dealing with the military, the state and local responders, and so forth. But it was an overwhelming event for me to participate in. It was an overwhelming honor to have been asked to do it by the President and Secretary Chertoff, that they had enough faith and confidence in me that I could go down there and have some effect on a situation that was pretty dismal at the time. And, of course, it was probably a life-changing event in my life, but it was an honor to serve down there.
Here in Michigan, we're surrounded by water and also surrounded by Canada for half the state. What can we do in Michigan to help you and your team at the Coast Guard?
Well, you can do a lot in Michigan for the Coast Guard and for the country. First of all, I don't have the exact figures in front of me right now, but I do believe that the state with the largest number of registered boats in the entire nation is Michigan, because you do have a lot of water up there. So the first thing I would ask the people in Michigan is be safe on the water. Despite significant improvements in boating safety over the years since the enactment of the Boating Safety Act in 1971, we still kill nearly 700 people a year on our waterways. And this has to do with having the proper equipment, having your boat inspected by the Coast Guard Auxiliary, and wearing life jackets. When we have a loss of life out there, the number one cause is usually because the individual were not wearing life jackets. And the other thing I would ask them to do is take a boater competency course, either offered by the U.S. Coast Guard Auxiliary or the local power squadron. And then finally, I would say when the Coast Guard comes alongside, have your documentation ready. Our people will be courteous and kind because they're directed to be, but they're also going to inspect if you're operating on the waters that you're going to be doing it safely, and we have a responsibility to make sure that happens.
Admiral Allen, we've just celebrated Christmas. What are you most grateful for?
Well, when I look back, especially at the last year that's been accomplished, I say the number one thing I'm grateful for are our Coast Guard people. We've had some extraordinary rescues where we've had people jump out of helicopters into raging seas in the Bering Sea to save people from sinking fishing vessels. We responded to oil spills. We maintain the security of the oil platforms in Northern Arabian Gulf, which are the main source of revenue for recovering Iraq. We intercepted about 170 tons of cocaine headed to this country on small boats from South America. So I am most grateful for the men and women of the Coast Guard that do that every day for our country.
Tom Friedman's book, The World is Flat. How has the international cooperation and coordination changed for you over these last 40 years?
Well, you know, Tom Friedman's book has become an international bestseller, and it really is true. The world is not only flat, but we're closer together. While we're not closer together physically, it's only two clicks of a mouse on the Internet to get just about anywhere in cyberspace. And we need to understand that this world has never been more connected. The challenge the Coast Guard has is understanding that 95% of all of the goods that come into this hemisphere come out of hemisphere, the goods that are coming in to be sold or bought for export come by vessel. The global transportation system is an extraordinarily valuable part of this global economy, and we're more dependent on it now than ever, and we need to make sure that it is safe and secure, especially in a post-9/11 environment. And so when I think of globalization and the world being flat, I think of the implications for maritime trade and our roles and responsibilities in that.
Admiral Allen, as we go into 2009, what are the two or three biggest challenges facing our Coast Guard today?
Well, operationally, our challenges are the transnational threats that are becoming more apparent every day, and that's illegal migration, trafficking in drugs. We're also very, very concerned about small vessels, especially after the Mumbai attacks. We have, for about the last 18 months, understood that we have a lot of recreational boats, as you do in Michigan, a lot of commercial fishing vessels, and I think the challenge moving forward is try to balance freedom of access to the water and freedom and autonomy to operate your vessels with the need to have better security to know what's going on out there, so if there is somebody plotting an attack or there's a threat to this country, we'll be able to react to it. Internally inside the Coast Guard, my goal for the next year is to stand up some new organizational structures that will help us be more effective in executing our mission and supporting our mission, and to be more effective in how we acquire platforms. We're going through a lot of business changes in the Coast Guard right now, but it's part of what I spoke about earlier in adapting our organization to change and where we need to be for the next century.
Throughout the world, unprecedented times with the economy, et cetera, here in Michigan with the automotive industry, phenomenal adversity economically. Talk to us about how a family gets through tough adversity.
Well, you know, these are cyclical events in our country's history. As I told you earlier in the interview, my parents are products of the Great Depression and and World War II. And while these things are going to happen from time to time, and sometimes it takes national-level efforts, which are being discussed right now between the President and the Congress, in the meantime, it allows us a chance, I think, for self-reflection. I think it's a good time to reinforce family values, things that are important to us, the things we do every day that add true value to our lives. And sometimes when you have to make tough choices when times are hard and there's not enough money, those choices become very important. They become life-changing in some cases. I know growing up in a family didn't have a lot of money early on. That's certainly what happened to us, and it really molded the character of our family, especially with my brothers and sisters being able to watch the decisions my parents were making and the effect of those decisions, and even in times where there wasn't enough, to understand that parents have a large role in managing family operations, if you will, And while it is tough, you always get through it, and the family is stronger for it, as our family certainly was.
Is the American dream still alive, Admiral Allen?
Oh, I think the American dream is still alive. Yes, it is. I think this is a cyclical issue regarding finance, and there's things we're going to have to fix in this country, and I'll leave that to people that are more qualified than I am to discuss. But we need to look forward with optimism. We live in one of the greatest countries on earth. It is free. It's not without its problems, but given the choice, most people would rather live in this country than any place else, and we need to make sure that in the future it is a country that our children will be safe and healthy living in. The chairman of our authorizing committee in the House, Elijah Cummings, has a saying that I like very much. He says that children are a message we'll send to a future that we will never see. And I think we need to do the best job we can in ensuring that future is prepared for them, and there are some challenges associated with that.
Last question. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Well, I think to be successful in life, you need to be kind of true to yourself and what you want to do and what you believe in and things that are important to you. And I believe in lifelong learning, or lifelong curiosity, always trying to be more in tune with what's going on around you. Keep learning. Do things based on experience. Try things. Don't be afraid of failure. Come back and give it another shot. And then treat everybody around you the same way, because you're going to need them at some point in your life to either help you or to help them. And this notion of building teams that we talked about earlier needs to be extended to how we deal with our communities as well.
Admiral Allen, thanks for 38 years of fantastic service, and thanks for the 42,000 teammates that you lead to protect us each day. God bless.
Thank you. It's an honor to serve.
Our guest next Sunday will be an American storyteller, Mr. Flashpoint, Devin Scillian. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening. And make 2009 a great year, because with God, anything is possible. Spohon.